Welcome to Beyond Evidence. Robin Martinelli, Martinelli Investigations. So glad we can have y'all today. Today's the day we're going to talk to a private investigator, a real private investigator, and get his take and his feelings and how he feels about being a private investigator in the state of Georgia. So we are, because of certain confidentiality, we're not going to mention his name, and I'm pretty sure he's excited about that.
Yes.
So tell us, Mr. Private Investigator, what do you like about being a PI in Georgia or a PI in general?
I like being able to help people, I guess, behind the scenes and not being on the forefront so much, I guess, would probably be my favorite thing about it. I like the mystery solving piece of it. And after going through some of the situations that our clients have, personally, it kind of gives you a little more fire behind certain cases, if you know what I'm talking about.
Your divorce.
Yes.
So we did go through your divorce. So when you went through the divorce, did that bring it sometimes home with what you did with other cases?
It brought it into more of a reality for me personally, I guess. I understood why certain people felt the way that they did sitting on the other side of our table.
Yeah, I remember that. And then we went to court.
Yes.
We had to go to our own court near our office in Loganville. After you got through that, how did you feel?
It felt great afterwards when it's all said and done. That's kind of another rewarding piece of being an investigator is you bring a client in and start a case with them and work with them all the way to the end and get to see it start to finish and see them hopefully happy at the end. Normally, that's the reaction that we have. Mm-hmm. But that's a great rewarding part of it.
And you've been doing this a long time in Georgia. Why do you like to do it in Georgia?
Our laws are different here than other states. That's a big thing. I could not be a private investigator in South Carolina, I would say.
Or Florida.
Yeah.
Because we are a one-party state. So what does that kind of mean in our field, in your opinion?
Well, I can record anybody at any time for any reason, and I can lie to them and even tell them I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfectly legal.
As long as you're part of the conversation.
Right.
Or
I can't leave something in a room and to spy technically and gather evidence or recording that way. But as long as I'm in the room, I can.
Right. The rewards that we get sometimes with these cases, they come back to us.
In a few different ways. One is always a good referral. We have a lot of people that come in off referral.
Mm-hmm. Because we've been doing this a long time, so since 2003 and earlier. So being a private investigator also helps the community. So do you remember the day we got a phone call from the national news about Mr. Jimmy Zong?
Yes. A blast from the past.
I know how it was. I remember the conversation, but you were there. So do you remember all the stuff we went through during the conversation? I mean, I almost didn't want to go on the air and I didn't want to go on TV, but you were shocked as we were.
Yeah, to find out what actually happened as far as him and his personal life and how he obtained, I guess, the financial status that he had.
Right.
That was very interesting.
Well, he drove up in the office, in our old office in 2019, in a Tesla, I remember.
Yes.
And it was almost like he was a wayward child from UGA.
He was really proud of his Tesla. He was. He really enjoyed that.
And he loved Chad. Who's Chad?
Oh, Chad. We love Chad.
Who is Chad?
Chad's the golden retriever.
That was his buddy. Like, Chad was everything to Jimmy.
Chad was Jimmy's ride or die.
I mean,
Chad didn't need Jimmy's money.
No. No. And he took this dog just about everywhere. But Chad was very important to Jimmy. Jimmy came in the office before I was amputated, so that was in 2019, and he had $400,000 stolen from him in his own house.
Yes, in cash.
In cash. Behind a secret wall.
Behind a fireplace.
In his house.
Mm-hmm.
It was so interesting that after he signed the contract, we rode over there. We got in the house, and he's like, Robin, look at all those fingerprints. So remember, there's fingerprints everywhere.
Yeah, and the house was something you wouldn't expect, I guess. It was kind of like a frat house, just a smaller version.
It was. Watches had been stolen. Electronics had been stolen.
Cryptocurrency
had been taken. Mm-hmm. And he showed us the wall but I saw all these fingerprints. And remember he asked me, he said, Robin, can we lift the fingerprints and stuff? And they were just so adamant. You could just see them. Mm-hmm. And we did get the police involved to come back out there, and they actually lifted the fingerprints.
Right. And he actually had pretty advanced security system on his home.
He did.
And that helped the cops out during this investigation. But ultimately, this small $400,000 would ultimately lead to Jimmy's downfall.
But it was a small amount of money compared to the...
Yeah, he should have took the L on the $400,000.
I just like, okay, so we go in, and then there was rooms he wouldn't let us see, so I knew that was kind of weird.
Like a server room.
Yeah, and I didn't know what that was all about, but I could hear it humming, mm-hmm. and I knew there was something strange about it. But then Jimmy started telling us about his friends. And all of his friends that would go on trips and private boats and private planes to go places and go shopping. So I described to the news that he had like plastic friends, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe this. I feel like Jimmy did try to buy his friends.
Yes.
I really do. And mm-hmm. just meeting him and knowing what I took off of him as the read of Jimmy, I don't think Jimmy was a bad guy. At all. Jimmy was a great guy. He mm-hmm. would have given you the shirt off his back.
Jimmy would have.
I think that he looked at what he had done, not necessarily as a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had stolen billions, right?
I was close to, I mean, it was a lot. It was over a million plus.
All of this cryptocurrency. But I think he didn't look at it as like walking in and holding a gun to somebody's head and robbing them. He was stealing it online. It was something easy. Who would even know? And when you're talking that kind of money, I mean, that's tempting for anybody.
Correct. And so I remember when we were talking, he said he didn't think his film from his security cameras would go back. I said, no, Jimmy, we can look, because, you know, he kept everything. So remember, we were sitting there in front of his electronics at his house near UGA, University of Georgia, and he went back and he looked all the way back to somebody, same person, attempted it to get in the house 2 weeks or a couple of weeks before they actually got in the house. So we had that, because the individual was coming up from the back of the lawn,
mm-hmm.
and then we had the actual break-in on film, and the guy was wearing a hoodie.
Yeah, he had a hooded coat on.
And he had gloves on. And so we measured his stature to his friends.
Right. He had a very specific list of friends. I guess he did a lot of partying with these friends. Now, in mind, Jimmy graduated a few years prior.
Oh, absolutely.
So he was just kind of hanging around. Like most people, once you graduate, you move away, you get mm-hmm. a job, you settle down. Mm-hmm. Well, Jimmy and Chad were still partying in Athens. Like, every weekend.
Probably, yes, because we investigated some of his friends. But in doing that, I bugged the police to try to help Jimmy and try to find his money. So ultimately, he did not find his money. But we got a phone call probably, 3 months ago from a big, huge outlet, media outlet that was doing a story on Jimmy. So when they called, they actually said, did you know that he was arrested? And so the news media was the first person to tell me that Jimmy had been arrested for a bigger crime and larger crime federally in New York. And the reporter was from New York. Of course, I'm just sitting there, and I know you were in the office too. I'm like, Jimmy? Right. I said, Jimmy Zahn and Chad? And I just couldn't believe the story that was spun.
Well, he did present himself to be very financially stable for a person of his age, in my opinion. He had these nice cars. He had a home that was paid for.
Remember, he had a home on the lake.
He did. And mm-hmm. he told me he also had a Lamborghini that he was having some work done to that was in a shop.
Mm-hmm.
It really made you question, and I think we talked about this originally, mm-hmm. where did he even get his money? We thought it was family. But he mm-hmm. told us that he had made some smart business decisions and investing mm-hmm. when Bitcoin first started. Because if I remember right, he mm-hmm. did help some sort of coding process for Bitcoin, right?
Something to that effect with digital currency. But what really shocked me the most about the whole situation was that he had already been caught and we didn't know it.
Right.
Nobody said anything. Jimmy didn't say anything. Jimmy ghosted everybody.
Right.
They were looking for Jimmy to film him and talk to him. And I finally found Jimmy. And Jimmy is now doing 12 months in the federal penitentiary in Alabama. I think he almost might be done. Don't know what happened to Chad. I was hoping Chad was taken care of.
Chad is taken care of, I believe, from the last thing I had saw on Chad by a friend of Jimmy's.
Right. What I thought would have been perfect was him to start to go work for the government and show the government exactly what he did and how he did it.
Yeah.
Because I think the government invested in it as far as they... I think the government actually sat down and got to know a little bit of currency and the Bitcoin and how it can be done and not. But this was a fascinating case because we helped Jimmy as much as we could.
Well, ultimately, according to this story from CNBC, Jimmy making that initial 911 call about the theft is ultimately what sparked in their mind to start an investigation.
On Jimmy.
Right.
Absolutely. And they felt the same thing too, because when they walked in there, I think it was Hall County, they were like, you know, Jimmy, what do you do for a living? And who
right.
could have took this?
This is when they went to the lake house. Right.
Right. And then they went to the lake house too. But it's a sad story because, you know, you care about your client. You don't want ill will on your client at all.
Right.
But to know we had no idea this was coming and that it was one of the largest cases. And it was out of New York, a jurisdiction.
I would have never imagined a little small town of Athens, Georgia, and a little $400,000 would lead to what it did.
And ultimately, I do not think the $400,000 was found. I bet it was spent.
I'm sure it was.
Remember, some of his friends were doing social media, and they were going places and buying motorcycles. And
but he also, that's the thing with Jimmy, and his friends have attested to this. If they needed something, he would get it for them. When he flew the friends out to the football
game
in California, he gave them all 10 grand in cash to go spend on Rodeo Drive on whatever they wanted.
That's what the news media said, yeah.
So
the reporter said that.
He took them on a private plane. I remember he did tell us about a private plane. He would fly in and out of the Lawrenceville airport.
Which had
time.
to be very expensive, but quite shocked about the 12 months too, but hopefully he's doing okay. But in a situation like that, we investigated, I think, the best that we could. And everything's not always about cheating spouses sometimes or custody. A private investigator can assist with the courts and the government if needed.
Do you remember the first time you talked to Jimmy? Didn't know how he presented the case. I remember you had called me after he had called.
Right.
And you were talking about a theft case, and you're like, it's a big amount of money. It's a big amount of money.
He wanted fingerprints lifted.
Right.
That was the number one thing he wanted. Can a private investigator lift fingerprints? And to my knowledge, I mean, I know we don't, and I can't refer any cases that we lift fingerprints.
Right. That's usually always the police get involved in that sort of thing.
What do you think the Jimmy Zons of the world at Bitcoin and digital currency has learned from this?
Take a loss on $400,000 if you're hiding a lot more.
But he was a great guy.
He was. And like I said, the cryptocurrency that he stole was from the Silk Road, right? The dark web, Silk Road gang.
Something to that effect.
So I really, he kind of felt like Robin Hood, I'm sure, in that moment.
I'm sure
he did.
No pun intended.
Right.
He sure
but
did.
I could imagine that. He's not stealing from a wealthy family, a business, a store.
The dark web knew it too, because they called the dark web and talked to him about it.
Right.
So he wasn't asking for it. They weren't asking for it back.
No, well, they knew better. They'd get caught.
They would.
That'd spark an investigation.
We really, really appreciate the fact that we came to a conclusion at the very end. And hopefully Jimmy has learned a lesson, but told him to call me when he got out. And I hope Chad was okay.
I'm interested to see where Jimmy's life will take him now. I mean, with a conviction like that, you're marked for the rest of your life.
Big conviction. But, you know, maybe he can help out the government. I don't know.
That would be a sweet deal.
So protocols that private investigators in the state of Georgia would normally follow. I know one would be if we're involved in a criminal case and sometimes a custody case that has a court date. Literally, we might have to speak to the police to ask them what they have done so we don't interfere with an investigation, like interviews that we do through a murder case or a different case that involves a court date.
Theft, even.
Absolute theft. And they said they've already dialed 911.
Right.
So we call the local police department and speak to the main investigator and ask them, are there things that they do not want us to tip off, like a neighbor or somebody involved in the case. And a lot of times they'll say, no, you could do just about anything, surveillance and everything. And if you have any leads, let us know.
But sometimes you'll get the one in a million that's like, no, you can't do anything.
True.
They're in charge of the investigation.
We do have that.
We've had that happen.
And
it's rare, but
it is. Because normally we're just doing backgrounds or running backgrounds.
Right.
Right. But we are allowed to put GPS trackers on cases that deal with custody and civil on public property. But sometimes we run into our clients like to take trackers like the AirTags and drop them in the car.
Yes. And then that exposes us in the long run.
Right. Now, a new trend is they're coming in our office saying, oh, I've already put a tracker on, or oh, I've already done an AirTag. And I'm like, okay, how are you doing that?
Right. Do you remember the case we had? I won't say the name.
Mm-hmm.
We had it on film that mm-hmm. the husband, they were going through a divorce, hadn't finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
He put a tracker on the wife's car.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it on film, called, reported it, and he was arrested and actually went to jail for aggravated stalking.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't know that. I didn't know that until I got into this field, but
we filmed him doing it.
Yeah.
We filmed him stalking her.
Yeah, he would follow her around, and we were wondering how he knew
where she was.
Right. And then we...
At her business.
Right. And we went through the surveillance footage at the business, and that's where we found where he did it.
Right. And he had some bizarre stuff in his house. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Some real bizarre stuff.
Going through the marital home was... Oh, my gosh.
Days.
He had hidden cameras everywhere, even in mm-hmm. some of the children's toys and things. He had them... In the garage, he would cut a hole in a box and just have the camera lens showing through that box.
Right, because we found the pictures and we found the film.
Right.
So sometimes we have to play offense and defense at the same time with our clients. What do you like different from our criminal cases due to our civil cases? So let's describe first what a criminal case is. A criminal case for a private investigator in the state of Georgia is going to deal with the state of Georgia or a different state and a crime, an actual incident that happens.
Right. Criminal is a lot harder, in my opinion. It's a lot more research, I feel like, more than anything.
It is.
Records requests, backgrounds, reports. You're kind of going off other people's information versus when we get a case in a civil divorce or custody, mm-hmm. we start all of that. We have our own evidence to go off of.
Right. Civil cases like custody, and we still can do open records request through that too, because you'd be shocked to see all the incidents that have happened through everybody's town doing little small open records request of an incident where somebody is screaming and hollering on the film of the 911 or the phone. There's a lot of evidence that you can find with just open records request. So when we end a case and we're able to hopefully win in court, how do you feel about that when you're sitting in the courtroom and everything goes as planned?
It's much better than being on the other side of it when it does not go as planned, as mm-hmm. we experienced earlier in the week. You can only coach your clients so much.
And you can only do as much as you can do. And we dress them, we prep them, we talk to the attorney, we drive witnesses to court if we have to, we make sure everybody has lunch, we sit and is amazed.
It's an all-day affair.
Oh, it is. And court doesn't take. When you have to go to court, it's never just an hour.
No.
And don't ever be late.
No.
And it's always past 5 or 6 o'clock. But I love the fact that you are the best private investigator and the fact that we can put cases together and other PIs and just work out through the whole state of Georgia and travel. So to be able to go to a case in Alabama, we always call their rules.
Right. Any case we go to. California is the same way. We had cases out there.
Right. And they accept our license as a reciprocal.
Right.
But laws change. So we always call before the case starts. If somebody's about to have a fair in California or Colorado or Minnesota, we don't assume that our license is reciprocal and is accepted in that state for right. a case. Like in Tennessee, we can only work 3 days.
Right. They give you a set amount of time.
They do, which is really odd, but we can go to Florida, Alabama. So we always check on that if the case goes that way or there's a witness. Every day is a different day. Every hour is a different time.
In each case, it might be, you might have 4 divorce cases in a row and the process is similar, but the little details in between each story change it so much. mm-hmm. the people, the situation, and that's what keeps it interesting for me. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I love it.
I'm so glad that you do. I'm so glad that you could come and speak to the world, and maybe we could do some more cases together and speak more about Beyond Evidence. Please contact us by our website, martinelliinvestigations.com. Martinelli ends in an I. Investigation starts with an I, so that's two I's with an S on the end. Our email is MII and then Georgia spelled out, GEORGIAPI@gmail.com. And please call us anytime at 770-337-3999, 770-337-3999 for a free consultation. Thanks so much and have a great peachy day.